Good morning. I hope we're going to have a good time together here. We have more time than I usually get. So my guess is my presentation will be about 45 minutes, and then we'll really have quite a lot of time to talk. So, but before I do that, I'm going to introduce myself in a minute, but let me know something about yourselves. How many of you in the last couple years have run into power and cooling problems? Look around. How many of you have built, let's see how I can word this, spent substantial money on data center upgrades for power and cooling? Okay, now put your hands down. How many of you are going to be expecting to spend money in the next couple years? Okay, so the topic we're talking about is very topical. And my fear, ladies and gentlemen, is it's not going to stop. What you have seen is just the beginning. And my presentation is about what's driving this and what you can do. Oh, the other question is, how many of you, was it a surprise that you had to spend all this money? Come on. And those of you that aren't putting your hands up, because for most people, it is a surprise. All of the large financials have at least $500 million to $1 billion construction programs that were unanticipated 3 years ago. How many of you have heard of idle? And how many of you would consider yourselves power idle people as opposed to just having heard about it? Okay. I'm going to suggest that IDLE is a way of linking IT and facilities in a way that may be very helpful. So with that, let me get into the presentation. And as I said, I think it'll be about 45 minutes, and then we'll have really quite a long time to talk. And I'm realize that some of the things that I'm going to be talking about are oriented toward larger installations. Well, that'd be a good question. How many of you have 50 racks or less? Okay, and how many of you have 100 racks or more? How many of you have 500 racks or more? Wow, okay. So we really got a sort of a real spread. Okay, so some of you are going to be, it's going to be an interesting audience to work with. Okay, so what we're talking about here is, why are facilities costs growing from 1 to 3% of IT's budget to 5 to 15% with no upper limit in sight? And what is going to happen when the CIO, CFO, CEO understands what the costs of the facilities are? How could this occur? You know, in 2000, who worried about power and cooling? Couple of you. And yet 6 years later, 7 years later, virtually everybody puts their hand up. What has happened? And for many of you, it's a surprise. I'm going to talk a little bit about green metrics and energy efficiency for profit and how you can be green if you want to be, or you can be, I mean, what I say is, when you go home, you can talk to your kids about how you're green, and at work, you can talk with your boss about how you're saving money. Both are the same thing. We're going to talk about ICE teams, integrated critical environment, and IDLE, and how you can link these things together to drive your costs down. For me, the economic meltdown of Moore's Law is, it's a fundamental change in the economics of IT. Facilities costs, for most of my career, have been an insignificant part of IT's total budget, almost a round-off error. That's no longer true. Sometime, either depending on what type of servers you have, but sometime between 2006 and 2009, the three-year cost of energy, just the electric bill alone, will exceed the cost of the hardware. If you're in the Northeast and you're paying 15 cents a kilowatt hour, it's already happened. If you're in the West and you're paying 3 cents a kilowatt hour, it may be a few more years before that shows up. Just to give you a point of reference, for most of my career, it took 40 years for the cost of electricity to equal the cost of the hardware. And you can see why nobody worried about facility costs. And this is a radical change. It's just happened. It's happened since 2000. And paying attention to this, for a large enterprise, we're talking hundreds, if not billions, of dollars. For smaller organizations, it will scale down. These are significant numbers. It's caught the attention of regulators. It's caught the attention of lots of people. And you're going to be hearing more and more about it. What I hope to do in this session is to explain to you what the fundamental drivers of this are. And it's so simple, I can explain it. It is very easily stated. What I have found is it takes three or four presentations for people to really absorb it, because simple things ultimately are somewhat complex. So if you don't feel like you got everything this time, that's okay. I've been doing this talk for a number of times. There is a white paper that goes through all of this on our website that you can download and read at your leisure. It is more explanatory than I can be in the period of time that I've got right now. So this is, how many of you are familiar with the Uptime Institute? We tend to be focused more on larger organizations. We are different from other organizations in the sense that we are member-driven. Our only income comes from members. I believe that benchmarking is critical. When I first got into this business, we made multi-tens of millions of dollars decisions based on emotional whim. And I've spent the last 15 years trying to bring solid data to decisions. So benchmarking is very important to us, and collaborative learning. In the field that we're in, there's no place you can go to school for the stuff I'm going to be talking about. The schools are just too far behind. And there aren't enough students to make education really work. So the way you do learning is you talk with other people who've been through sort of the same thing, and you hopefully, each of you bring in something different to the party, and collaboratively you learn. We just finished a design charrette 2 weeks ago in Santa Fe, where we brought together the best thinking in the world about how do we deal with this energy problem. There is no single place anywhere in the world where all this knowledge exists. It's all collaborative. These are some of our members. They tend to be fairly large. Data centers, average size, 60,000 square feet. But even if you would view these as large mega institutions, the problems that they have are identical to the problems that somebody that has one rack or 10 racks has. The difference, the large institutions have more resources to deal with the problems. But the fundamentals are identical no matter what the size of your data center. This all goes back to Moore's Law. And for those of you that are interested in this, the Wikipedia has a particularly good explanation of Moore's Law. Originally, in 65, Moore said that the number of transistors on a die would double every 24 months. And at the time he made the prediction, he said it was only good for 5 years. In fact, it has worked out that the number of transistors on a die could double every 18 months, and it's been going now for 40-plus years. And what's happening is, even though the power consumption per transistor is going down, it's not going down as fast as the number of transistors are going up. That's the fundamental problem. So if we look at this, there's very little information available about data center energy consumption. My friend John Kumi did the first study on this. Came out in the early this year. And John was only able to look at servers. Now, data centers are more than servers. They also have storage and a bunch of other stuff. But what John came up with was that the energy consumption in the United States, and by extension pretty much the world, he looked at that also. But let's look at just the United States. The energy consumption in the United States for servers was 0.6% of total electrical production in 2000. I round that up to really 1% because when you add in the storage and the other stuff, it comes up. What we see happening between 2000 and 2005, the number doubled. And if we look out to 2010, we see almost another doubling. Data center energy consumption is the fastest growing area of the electrical energy consumption in the United States. This has caught the attention of Congress and regulators and whatnot. The EPA published a report in the summer on some of the findings. You will hear increasing, this is a big deal. Our own numbers do not reflect the growth rate reported by John. And I think there's a fair amount of confusion about what are the real numbers. We're at the infancy of trying to sort this out. Within our own membership, we're seeing a compound 8% annual growth rate. Well, over 5 years, an 8% annual growth rate is 50%. So whether it's double or 50%, it's still substantial. And as I said, there is no upward bound that I can see. There are people talking about it, but I don't see it really happening yet. And this is the fundamental problem. The number of transistors on the chip are growing exponentially. And by the way, this is a log scale here. The number of transistors on a chip are growing exponentially. If this wasn't a log scale, what you'd see is this kind of curve. But the rate of energy efficiency is not going up at the same rate. So total power consumption is going up. Here's just a very simple model. If the computational increase goes at 3x every 2 years, which would sort of follow Moore's law, and the power efficiency increase was going at 2x every 2 years, that doesn't sound like much of a difference. But over 12 years, you have a 729x increase in computational performance, but only a 64 times increase in energy efficiency. When you divide one into the other, you find that the power consumption goes up by 11x, even though the consumption per computational unit has gone down from 1 to 0.009. This is what's driving our crisis. Now let's look at the economics of this. How many of you think that the... nobody's going to hold up their hand. I'm sorry. I'll ask the question, but don't hold up your hand. How many of you think that the costs in a data center are driven by square feet? If you put your hand up, slap it. The costs... Square feet costs in a data center are irrelevant. And anybody who is using square feet numbers needs to fire themselves. You have not been reading the literature. You are not up to date. You will make disastrous decisions. The costs in a data center are driven by the power consumption of the IT equipment. If you look at that, if you pull that cost out, and just look at that cost relative to square foot cost, you will find that the square foot cost is in single digits. So anybody who is trying to manage the cost of a data center project by reducing square feet needs their head examined. What drives cost is IT power consumption, and that's the sum of all the plug loads. That's all the pieces of equipment that you're plugging in. Now this chart, and again, this is all in the white paper and it's explained more elegantly. So what I want you to draw from this is not the detailed numbers that I'm presenting here, but the overall concepts. If we look out in 2000, and I realize some of you won't spend $1 million a year, but some of the people here will spend multiples of $1 million a year on hardware. I use this slide to say that if you do a normal technology refresh, you can obsolete your data center. This slide explains why. What's happening is for the same $1 million in 2000, If I go out to 2012, you get this 729x increase in performance, and traditionally that's what IT has looked at. Here's the shocker. $1 million of spending back in 2000 on servers brought with it only 32 kilowatts of power consumption. In 2012, that same $1 million brings with it 398 kilowatts. And what is the cost of a data center driven by? IT kilowatts. So you have a 11x increase in power consumption for the same dollar spending. And since most organizations historically have never talked, the facilities and IT people don't talk together, when the hardware rolls in and facilities says, I don't have any place to put it, I don't have the capacity to run it, that is the first time the need to talk together occurs. So we've got this, for the same dollar spending, you get more kilowatts. If we look at the CapEx, and this is the cost of the site to support $1 million of IT spending, back in 2000, it was $800,000. The same $1 million of spending in 2012 has a $11.6 million cost. This can be a career-ending event if you haven't been talking. Just the electrical consumption back in 2000 to support $1 million over 3 years was less than $100,000. In 2012, we're looking at $2 million to support $1 million in IT hardware spending, and that assumes a 7 cents a kilowatt hour rate. And I don't know how many of you are paying 7 cents a kilowatt hour rate today, let alone in another 6 years. If you're in the Northeast, you're up in above 10 cents a kilowatt hour. It is not an accident that you see where the Googles and the Microsofts and the Yahoos are locating. They are locating where they can get power at 3 cents a kilowatt hour. Now you ask yourself, why did Google go to South Carolina? Where are you going to get cheap power there? Well, what has happened, and this is an anomaly that will exist for a period of time, we've outsourced so much production to China that there are some areas of the country that have vast surpluses of industrial power, South Carolina being a place where textiles have gone to China. There's also in Detroit, in the Michigan area, you can get sub 3 cents a kilowatt hour power right now. So if you go over to the orange or the next to the last column, the 3 year site TCO. What's the site TCO? Well, it's the energy cost, of course, is a big one. You've also got the operating costs of running the UPS and the power equipment and some other costs and the maintenance on that. And plus you have to amortize the facility costs, the capital investment. So back in 2000, the 3 year cost for the site TCO was $500,000 on $1 million. Back then, we didn't really worry about this. When we get out to 2012, the site TCO costs are going to be $7 million on $1 million of IT spending. What this is doing is invisibly siphoning away money from IT hardware, IT stuff. And the question will ultimately come, and typically this is invisible, this is why I call it the invisible problem. This problem shows up when you have run out of capacity and now the organization has to spend millions or tens of millions or billions of dollars to build more infrastructure. That is when the rubber meets the road. Exciting time. And we can do things to change this. We don't have to sit by and let this happen to us. A very simple thing when you go home is to find for yourself. This isn't brilliant. Find out, check the numbers yourself as to what is really happening. It's a very simple metric that you can do. Go back to 2000 and find out what $1,000 or $10 million or some metric of spending that was common for you, and look at how much power consumption came with it. And don't use the book value. The book value that's in the manufacturer's catalogs is wrong. Use half of it or measure it or whatever. But if you do that, find out how much power consumption came with a aggregate amount of IT spending, and then just calculate watts per $1,000 of spending. So you can calibrate what your IT budget for hardware acquisition is and how much power it's likely to bring with it. And it will be a very simple predictor as to what is going to happen to your data center. This is the curve that I've developed with this. And as you can see, this is where we are now, 125 watts per $1,000. And I don't really care whether it's 80 or 150. You will get a range. But look at the trend. And as I say, there's no, at least that I can see, no upper limit. What we want and what you should be demanding, absolutely demanding, from your IT hardware vendors and from Intel. And don't get confused by, you know, the chips getting more efficient. It is. But then what we do is jam more chips in. You have to look at the plug load. From, as a facility guy, all I care about is how many kW or watts I have to deliver to the plug. That determines my costs. So you have to do the same thing. So don't get confused by, you know, the multi-core and all that. It's all important. But what we have to look at is what is the productivity per watt at the plug. From my perspective, that's what matters. And what we want to see is the energy efficiency going up faster than the rate of computational performance. This is true in storage. It is not true in servers. So we want to drive, the red is what we've got, the green is what we'd like to have. If you tell your vendors the green statement, it will be a shock to them. Because what they are looking at is trying to bring, they're down in this red area. To get to the green area requires technologies I don't think have ever been invented yet. But that's what we got to do. That's the only way we are going to stop this growing consumption of energy in the economy, which is probably over the long term perhaps not sustainable. I believe that there's opportunities for energy efficiency, and I'm going to be talking about these, the ways that we can save money today. We have a window. We have been extremely wasteful, and there is gold on the floor if we are willing to bend over and pick it up. Again, data centers, $20 million used to buy you a data center. Data center, $20 million today didn't buy very much. Stuff for large enterprises is measured in hundreds of millions of dollars. On one day this year, more projects were announced than I had worked on in 15 years. One day. And this is just a fraction of what's going on. We are busier building data centers than we've ever been, even at the height of the internet build-out. The costs have risen. The lead times have stretched out. It's a boom time for those who design and build data centers. Remember, costs are driven by kW, not by square feet. In the project shown here, the square foot costs are less than 3% of the total. 97% of the cost in the project shown is going to be in mechanical electrical equipment, which is size based on the consumption of IT hardware. We've just published a white paper. There's a link at the end of this presentation. There are four things that determine the greenness of a data center. And we can talk about greenness in terms of energy efficiency for profit, which is probably the way you want to talk about it with your boss. And when you go home, you can talk about your kids about how you're saving the environment. Both, to me, they are synonymous. when you hear people talking about these things, there's a tremendous amount of confusion because we're just in the beginnings of trying to sort this out. I'm focused primarily, not even primarily, exclusively on data center energy consumption. Yes, there are things you could do on the source of the energy in terms of it's being green. You can have renewables, you can have carbon, I mean, there's just an endless number of things that you could do there. But the biggest thing we can do for the environment is to cut our consumption, not where we get the source of the power. The source of the power I regard as sort of an economic problem, where the people in this room can do something about reducing consumption. If you notice, we come up with four metrics. Three of them are determined by IT. Only one of them is determined by facilities. The first one is the strategy, IT strategy. If you have an active data center with a high degree of redundancy and robustness, that commits you to a very high level of energy consumption, inherently, and cost. On the other hand, if you have an N plus one sort of data center and only a one-off image, then you have a much lower energy consumption. Now, the problem in the field right now is that you have different people saying things without understanding differences. The people that have for whom high availability is important, so they have an active strategy, they have multiple global data sets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, should be measured against other institutions that have the same strategy. People that are doing web serving or search engines or whatnot that have a N plus one concept should be measured against themselves. Computing requirements are different and they are driven by business purpose. So to say that you should be comparing to people who have a similar strategy. That said, there are things that within that strategy that can dramatically influence energy consumption. That's number two. Hardware utilization. Over and over again, we hear and observe up to 30% of the servers in many organizations, in many data centers, are what we call comatose. They are consuming energy, but they are not doing any work. And some of them have not been doing any work for 5 years. And they should be killed. They should be shot. They should be turned off. The way you discover this is when you go to do a migration. And you go from one data center to another data center, because that's the point at which all the hardware's got to be identified. And for those who do that kind of work, they discover, and this goes back to, we've not been willing as an industry to spend money on good management. We've cut back on management. Servers are so cheap, we don't need to manage them well. And what happens is we have an installation process, but we don't have a deinstallation process. And so stuff gets orphaned. So up to 30% of the servers in many data centers could be turned off. And that directly relates to energy consumption. And yet, it's a career-ending event if you go out on your own and turn off a server that might have something that runs on it only once a year that you didn't know about. So this requires a change in policy. It's not an accident that this has occurred, but to harvest this gold nugget, and by the way, it's not only energy consumption that's costing money, but you're paying licenses on it and you're paying maintenance on it. But this is the prime gold nugget. Another one is on storage. The EMC people have said in multiple times that only 10% of the data is touched every 90 days. Well, why can't we move 80% of the data to slower, and they say that everybody's got the fastest spindles. Well, as the spindle speed doubles, the power consumption goes up by a factor of 8. So why couldn't we move some of the less important data down to slower spindles? You'll save energy, your energy consumption will go down by a factor of 8. And yet, when they make this suggestion, it's not responded to. And I can go on and on with other examples of things that we could do. And when we get into the quiet Q&A session, I'll get into some of that, see if any of you are into it. Energy-efficient hardware. All of the hardware manufacturers offer more energy-efficient products, and they do not sell. You should be willing to pay a premium for more energy-efficient hardware. In fact, the premiums that they want relative to what you could afford to spend relative to the savings, it's a no-brainer to do, and yet it's not happening. And this reveals another linkage problem, where the procurement organization and the IT and the strategy part of IT and the facilities part of IT don't talk to each other. So nobody knows how much, what kind of, could I spend 3% more, 5% more, 20% more? In some cases, you could spend 20% more for a more efficient piece of hardware and it would make great sense. Other cases, you could spend 5%. These are economics that we as an industry need to learn about. And finally, the site infrastructure overhead. And we have, this is a concept the Institute has been promoting for a number of years now. For every watt that IT needs, at the meter, we bring in as much as 3 watts. That means that 2 watts, somewhere between the meter and the IT hardware, has been lost. That's what we call the site infrastructure overhead. Now, how do you minimize that? Well, as a facility guy, I can do some things, but a lot of my overhead is determined by how you lay out the room. It's determined by whether you block, you do the hot and cold aisles that the Institute has been promoting for years. And by the way, there are 28 things that you need to do to be in a valid hot and cold aisle situation. And when we go out and do audits, people do at best 5 or 6 and think that they are hot and cold. That's not true. There are 28 different things you need to do to get the full performance out of hot and cold. This is why we recommend we get to liquid cooling as quickly as possible, because it will reduce the skill level required to get the cooling done the most efficient way. I've been saying this since 1999. We're closer to it than we have been. But I think air cooling is going to be with us for a number of years, and people need to learn the 28 things. And if you're curious, it's on our website, been there for the last 10 years, and it will save you money. This is a simple way of understanding what I'm talking about. Over here, this is what you see at the meter. So we bring in 2 to 3 watts at the meter. And here is what we do with it. And you may not be aware of, you know, at the plug, depending on the efficiency of the power supplies and the fans, less than half of what's at the plug actually does computational work. So there's an overhead within the IT hardware, and then there's overhead of just providing the power and cooling for the plug. So what we want to do, this is what does work, computational work. All the red needs to be reduced. And there are different parts of this. Now this is, again, this is talked about in our white paper on 4 metrics. And so you'll see this in there if you want to pursue this further. Now, when we're looking here at IT output, the problem is that this includes those comatose servers and that storage that isn't doing anything. So let's take another look at this. What we have IT equipment, this is what's doing real work. These machines are consuming energy, but they're not doing any work. They should be turned off. So there's a whole series of things that we can do as you get into this. It's really quite amazing, the potential savings. So for large enterprises, there's at least $100 million. And for some organizations, it will be in the billions. Even for the small organizations, it's in the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars over 10 years. We have to overcome rigid organizational boundaries between IT and facilities and procurement. We have to align authority and accountability. If you line up your, if in your data center, if you have all the racks facing in one direction, and I want to ask people to put their hands up, because this is common, even 10 years after we've been talking about this, and over again, ask, why is it that the racks are all facing one? Because the CIO wants to see all the labels. That single decision cuts the capacity of your data center for cooling in half. That single decision. So we got to, the engineering in a data center is no longer stuff you can, if you want to do the high performance, you want to get the most value out of your capital, this is no longer whimsical. It has to, it is a highly engineered thing. There are principles and rules, and they have to be followed. And there are consequences to not doing it, called hotspots and not being able to utilize the capacity that you've got. There are ways, and we'll talk about some of them in the Q&A session, about harvesting these gold nuggets. They're all over. But they require us to behave differently. And then raising on the chip and hardware manufacturers, it's not good enough to bring the energy efficiency from 2x to 2.5x. We want the energy efficiency growing at a faster rate than the computational performance. That is ultimately so that the total energy consumption goes down. That's what's ultimately going to get us out of this fix. This is our integrated critical environment team. For the people here that have fewer than 50 racks, you probably are your own facilities department. For the larger organizations that have more than 500 racks, you probably do have a facilities department. This is a conceptual model for how to relate the issues that we're talking about. We have up here in the Q1 environment, the CFO, the CIO, CIO, CTO, also the procurement people, the strategy people, the capacity planning people, who typically don't even talk in the capacity planning model, typically does not include the facility capacity planning. Surrounding that quadrant, you have the business units, and I think we need to recognize that in many cases, it's the business units that are screwing everything up because they want to use IT to produce value, and that's good. But they result in high rates of change and unplanned problems and whatnot. And the problem is that we don't charge back to those business units in ways that they can understand what the cost of their lack of planning is. We have to get better at being able to do that so that they can optimize their decisions. And then you've got your other providers to IT going around. Over here, you've got the data center manager. For many of you, as a system administrator, you may be the data center manager. Your job is how do you rack and stack this stuff? How do you arrange it? How do you block the holes in the perforated tiles? Are you using a raised floor? There's a whole series of decisions that fall on your side. In the Q3 area, these are the guys that run the cooling plant and the air conditioning units. How many of you set? Let me ask the question. The classic question is, why is the hot aisle the same temperature as the cold aisle? The hot aisle is supposed to be hot. In fact, the hotter the better. And what you find is the perforated tile is moved during the night. And they used to be in the cold aisle, and you come in, and now they're in the hot aisle. And you ask, why did these perforated tiles? Well, because it's too hot. The hot aisle, ladies and gentlemen, is supposed to be too hot. You do not want the temperature coming out of your cooling units to be below 60 degrees. And yet many of you will have temperatures coming out of your cooling units down in the 50s. That is incredibly energy inefficient. And in fact, it reduces your capacity. You may think that you are increasing your capacity, but you're not. You're dramatically reducing it. Most of you have 2 to 3 to 4 times more cooling running than is required. And it is consuming prodigious amounts of energy. And if you actually did a scientific study, you will find that you do not have, you think that you're doing goodness, but you're not. The science of cooling in a data center is, there's a science to it, and many of us are just are making bad mistakes. And we can increase our energy efficiency, increasing our cooling reliability, reduce hot spots. It's all goodness, but it requires some knowledge that we, many of us, don't have. And so finally, we go back up here to the Q4, which is the EVP of corporate real estate, who typically sees the data center as a huge problem. And why are those guys always complaining? So we've got these gold nuggets. There's up to a 50% reduction. This is a one-time deal. There's up to a 50% reduction available depending on how far along you are on your greenness path. We talked about some of them, killing the comatose servers, changing the set points on your cooling units, blocking the cold air paths, implementing the true hot and cold aisles that we have in our papers, implementing power save features, and this is something I want to come back to in the Q&A session, as well as virtualization. So I'm not going to go into this in detail. These are in the paper. We can discuss what each of these, you can read this to see what's of interest to you. But these are the things that could be done in each quadrant to reduce energy efficiency or to improve energy efficiency. I'm almost finished here. This is now the EITL. And this is how EITL can be used to link IT and facilities. EITL actually came from Britain. One of the guys at the Institute, Alistair Meldrum, in the early 80s started EITL. It was IBM, their large system practice. IBM gave it to the British government, and it has ultimately become EITL, and it's coming back to the U.S. Within EITL, there's something called the Configuration Management Database. Historically, the Configuration Management Database has only included the IT hardware. It needs to also include facilities. We have what we call a Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, Tier 4 configurations. The cost for a Tier 4 configuration is approximately double that of a Tier 2. The whole purpose of going spending double on your facility costs is to create fault tolerance. And yet every time we have a failure of a facility failure, we typically find, when we have a failure of one side of an AB system, we find that the IT guys go down. Well, why? Because they had dual power, but they plugged both cords into one side. If you go to a Tier 4, you have to be consistent in how you do things. The IT architecture and the facilities architecture have to match up. For example, if you have redundant modems, if that's your concept for how you will get connectivity to the outside, the modems need to be plugged in. The ones that are redundant have got to go into an A, and the other one's got to go into a B. If both of them go into an A and the A goes down, on the facility side, IT is going to go down. This stuff has to be tracked in the Configuration Management Database. It is not today, from what I know. But this is the place to get that. The other thing that needs to go into that is the service level, the site service level. I don't know why it is that IT will agree to service level agreements with your users that call for a high level of availability, and you don't have a similar service level agreement with your site people. Sort of like, huh? How could that be? So these service levels need to be lined up, and this is the place to do it. And finally, this is the place to do chargeback. Because until the business units see a consequence of running 500 or 400 servers, and this is a real case, 400 servers that were comatose, but until it was quantified what it was costing the business unit, there was no motivation to turn it off. So the chargeback can be part of this as well. So these are some of the resources that you have available on our website at uptimeinstitute.org. They're free. The things that I've talked about are largely there. The three big ones are the economic meltdown of Moore's Law, which came out in the September time frame. This four metrics paper came out about a month ago. And then we have a new one called the Model for Total Cost of Ownership, which is a really interesting model. And there's a free spreadsheet. And you can plug your own information into this. This is the beginning of an idea. The first version of this may not be real useful to you, but future versions will get increasingly better. And you can plug in different choices that you've got and see what the economic consequences of it are. As we go forward, we offer seminars, and we also offer our 08 symposium will be on the Green Data Center. So with that, I'm finished. We're about 45 minutes into this, and perhaps you can help me with questions. How do you do this? People come up or okay?
We've got this nifty microphone for people to speak into. So my name is Doug Hughes. I'm with D.E. Shaw Research in Manhattan. And for obvious reasons, we built our new data center not in Manhattan because it's the most expensive power in the country. But what we were looking at is we did an investigation of basically bringing water cooling out to the servers. And we looked at everything. We looked at all the Liebert options. We looked at the APC options. We looked at water-cooled racks in particular. And I guess what I want to say about the water-cooled racks is I find them very promising in terms of the technology and how you can and bring the cooling right out to the machines. But what we found was that the capital costs of those racks currently are so high. I mean, in small quantities, they're like $20,000 each. And in large quantities, they drop to a very reasonable $15,000 each, that it's still much cheaper to buy a 40-ton Liebert crack unit for $17,000, put it out on your floor, and do a whole bunch of racks at one time. And so we went through this trade-off, and we decided that instead of going with the water-cooled racks, we could get similar efficiency with the Lieberts today, partly I think because the heat exchanger in the racks isn't optimal. It's aluminum versus a copper heat exchanger and various other factors. That doing a totally isolated cold room and then hot surrounding space infrastructure worked better for us, at least for this data center that we're building. I'm wondering if you have any, I mean, does that match what you're seeing, or are there new water-cooled racks coming out that will lower the cost? Is it a problem of supply and demand? What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to go through three stages in this, and we're in the beginnings of it now. Ultimately, you're going to buy this from the manufacturer with all the stuff done. I mean, it's sort of insane that you as a user have to do this engineering. I mean, ultimately, the manufacturers need to have a cold plate that the chip, I mean, back to the mainframe. I mean, that's where we will be probably 5 to 10 years from now. We're going through an intermediate stage that's fairly costly. I would like to ask you a real question you may not have considered. How many of you have in your disaster recovery plan a plan for your cooked computer room? Computer room? Why do you have, what causes disaster recovery plan activations? Is it a hardware problem? Not typically. Software problem? Not typically. You're going to recover in place. Who wants to go to their DR site where they don't have the resources? You're going to recover that in place. Why do you go to a disaster recovery plan? The reason is because of a facility problem. Well, we know that the historical problems have been water, smoke, electrical failure. The new one is going to be, we cooked the computer room. At high densities that you're talking about, I would ask you to, did you consider the temperature rise if you lose cooling for 1 minute?
Luckily, since I work for a research company, we don't have any 24/7 customers, so when the power goes out, we shut everything down and the chemists just have to wait.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, that's you know, there is, ladies and gentlemen, one of the things I want to tell you, there is no one right answer. The right answer has to be tuned to your business requirements. The reason I'm saying this is that if in the high-density environment that the water cooling will be applicable to, if you try to do that with air, you will have a temperature rise in the first 2 to 3 minutes of up to 25 degrees F. The equipment is going to thermal off on its own. The hardware may be damaged. We don't really know. So, you know, when you cook a computer room, and this is already happening, it's not really written up, it's already happening. If you have cooked your computer room and the hardware is no longer reliable, what do you do? Because the only way you can get it to be reliable is to live with 3 months, up to 3 months of random failures as stuff falls out, or replace all the hardware. So will you go to your DR site to do that, or will you live with the unavailability? Reason I'm saying this is it's a lot easier if you use water cooling to provide a thermal battery to ride through, because if you have a UPS system, the batteries in the UPS system will continue to provide electricity and the electricity will continue to generate heat. But if the cooling doesn't work, the temperature in the computer room must rise. At the low densities that we had back in 2000, most people didn't run into this, didn't worry about it. Today, it's a serious concern. Water cooling, it is much easier to have a thermal battery with water cooling than it is with the air cooling. I'm sorry, that was a long way around that. So to summarize, water cooling, I think, will be the standard 10 years from now. We will go through a bloody period getting from one system to the other. Please.
I gotta say real fast, I like the term thermal battery because it brings it down to the same terminology that people are used to with UPSs. So that was a cute little side comment. But my question is actually regarding, we're a colo inhabitant. So we aren't necessarily building the data centers, but we're, you know, using them as much as possible. I get charged by the plug. And add to that my business unit, you know, no matter how much I use on that circuit, I get charged by the circuit. And our business units actually prefer the fixed cost over variable costs. Mm-hmm. Those two mindsets together make it, you know, obviously there's, you know, social incentive and ethical incentive on my part, but from an economic standpoint, there really isn't an incentive for me to change the way I run, you know, comatose servers or anything like that. How do you address that mentality?
That's the perverse incentives. We have incentives that don't cause people to do things that make smartness for the organization, and we have to change that, or we will continue to do what we're doing. And I think one of the problems with the... if you are in a... colo that is still charging by the plug, I would be worried about their long-term economic viability because they haven't gotten the model that plugs aren't really the thing, it's power consumption. So I would guess over time they will start charging for actual power consumption rather than by the plug. Now there's a shell game that goes on because most people have no idea what it is that they are consuming. And so by the plug, they are, at least historically, they have made more money. But as they begin to understand the real economics, they'll move away from a plug charge to an actual charge. That would be my forecast. So over time, I think, the colos, there's no magic answer to this. You can say, well, I'm going to outsource it. You know, the colos are going to be, you know, they got the same economics. The site issues that we're talking are driven by KW, and KW doesn't matter whether it's in your shop, in somebody else's shop, or it's in China. KW is KW. The question is, what is the energy cost associated with KW? That drives the economics. So most of the colos that charge by the plug, at least in the 2000-2001 timeframe, are out of business because it was an unsustainable economic model. I don't know if I answered your question or.
Well, it sounds like, if I can summarize, wait for the colos to change their strategy if they haven't already.
It will happen.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Christian Bauernfeind, and the question I want to ask is, how do I make the business case to buy a slow server? There's a number of factors that are working against me here. First of all, it's a hard jump for me to make because I like having the newest gear and the fastest. There's also my customer who wants the fastest gear, and they have this wonderful number they can throw around. If they finish a project a day late and are to the market a day late, they lose $1 million. And I cannot argue with this because the number is made up of whole cloth, so I have no chance at denying this. And also, finances isn't on my side because, as it turns out, buying a server is investment. Buying the power to run it afterwards is expenses. And it appears that shareholders don't really mind expenses, but they hate investments. So how do I make the business case to buy green?
Okay, very good point. Typically, the way you're going to get the... Do you have your own data center?
Yes.
Okay, the way you get that is when you've run out of capacity. And you're now... And how big is your data center?
Well, we have several ranging from the small server room with about 10 to 20 units to bigger data centers with, 400 and more.
Okay, so when you run out of capacity, my guess is it's at least, for your larger one at least, it's $1 million. The smaller one, it might be $50,000 or $75,000. Greenness is a way of not spending, you can either spend it on energy efficient hardware, or you can add more power and cooling. It's one or the other. The only point you'll get people's attention is when they're looking at what the alternative is. In between, the energy costs will probably round off errors as people think about it. Now, what we're talking about goes over here. This is the computational performance. Now, there's some chips that do a better job of computational performance per watt than others. This is the whole battle between AMD and Intel. So you want to look at, what is my IT output for my hardware plug load? Now, some people do a much better job of the power supply design and the fan design than others. So you can pay a premium, and we will have a paper out on this probably before the first of the year, of how much can you pay is a premium to buy hardware per watt that you save. And I think you will find that it makes sense. And you can apply your own discount rate and figure this out. You can afford to easily spend 3 to 5 to 10% more for the hardware for the energy savings that you'll get with it. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
I guess, could you kind of expand? I mean, part of the problem we're having, and we can't afford to have the no vacancy sign go up on our data centers. So, you know, it's like we need to figure out some way of getting the business units to cooperate, but the decisions to expend capital is at the manager and director level, but a lot of these issues are at the VP level and higher, and they don't mesh. And so the economic reality that these managers and directors are living in is, what we're proposing is a very bad business decision. It's like, why do I want to spend X? I want to spend X. I don't want to spend 3 or 4X. So I'm like, what can we do to create economic factors that they can go and put into these business decisions so that they actually make sense for them?
You've hit it on, that's at the heart of the problem.
Does the Uptime Institute have any, I guess, best practices for communicating that? Because we have two data centers on campus, we're building a third, and right now we're going through and doing many things, shutting off old servers, virtualization, yada, yada. Well, it's the end of the year. Big spend is happening right now, and so they're outstripping my ability to save power by quite a bit. You know, it's just like I just can't keep up. There are all these people ganged up against me spending money and buying new servers. So,
yep. I totally agree. I understand. Mm-hmm. One of my research goal for the next 5 months in preparation for our symposium next year is to take the ideas in the Carnegie Mellon software development organizational maturity model and apply them to data center greenness. And to come up with a set of, we have four metrics, and to come up with a set of questions for each of the four that reveal how mature an IT organization or an enterprise is in thinking about these issues. Ultimately, I think it's the chargeback that's going to get people's attention. Until the chargeback is granular enough that people can see the, you know, I'm going to spend more on this server for the electricity, not my total chargeback, but just for electricity than it's costing me to buy the hardware. If you're charging back on a square foot basis, it's not, you're not doing it right. You've got to be charging back on a, at least from a facility standpoint, on a kilowatt, not a kilowatt hour, but on a server that is consuming 1 kilowatt of energy and a server that is getting half a kilowatt of energy, but occupies the same space. If you're on a square foot model, which is where most of us are, if we have anything, the server that's consuming twice as much is going to get the same charge. And until we get the charge for the more energy intensive server to be the same, be double that of the less intensive, we're going to deal with these perverse incentives.
In your opinion, are there any good published chargeback models available right now?
I'm looking.
Okay.
I'm looking. I think we're in areas of uncharted area. It's pretty exciting. I mean, here I'm a gray guy, and I'm thinking many of my friends are looking at retirement. Boy, this is the most exciting stuff in my career. It's pretty exciting stuff.
Thank you.
Hi. This is more of an idle muse rather than a specific question, but I'm sitting there thinking about this. For this particular community, it occurs to me that perhaps there's a lot of people who don't have a lot of power, sorry for the pun, in terms of what's happening. Many people in this room spend most of their life having things thrust upon them rather than getting to do something. It seems to me that one thing that pretty much everyone in this room can look at, as I'm thinking about the lots of talk about configuration management, monitoring is also another thing. One thing that one never sees on all of the graphs that we produce on network throughput, storage, is how much power. And most equipment actually has that information available. So perhaps the very least we could do would be to actually give visibility to the power for the equipment that we are running on whatever graphs you're putting out.
Absolutely.
That may actually just be enough to catch somebody's attention. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But it's just as an idle thought. That visibility could be, if nothing else, something that we can do.
In the idle format, there's a lot of stuff on IT capacity management, and there's nothing on facility capacity management. And that needs to be added.
I mean, I've just had to add a couple of racks and spent some extra money on getting PDU strips that actually have monitoring in them and so on, mm-hmm. so that I can actually pull information from there because it seems like useful information.
One of our members is State Farm, and State Farm is pretty unusual in that they have a strong engineering, because they're an insurance company, they have a strong facility management group. Unfortunately, relative to where I started, we don't have engineering expertise much anymore, and we rely largely on vendors, and the interests of the vendors don't really align with that of users. State Farm has a strong engineering group. They have set up a laboratory, and they, when they're buying new platforms, the platforms go through the evaluation on the IT metrics, and now they've added the facility metrics. So now you get performance per watt, which has never been there before. And one of the things, State Farm's buying 100,000 PCs a year for their organization. And one of the things they did was to look at the payback for having, you know, 100,000 PCs a year. People will jump through hoops, right, to get the order. So they came up and they measured the energy efficiency of the equipment, and lo and behold, the claims about energy efficiency as measured did not hold up, but there were some that were more efficient, and the payback was 9 months for the incremental cost. So that means that for after, if you've got a three-year life, you've got then a whole bunch of life where you're just saving energy. This requires a level, I mean, we cannot do, there's fundamental engineering that has to become part of these issues and costs and whatnot. It's going to be exciting. Those who get it are going to save money, and those that don't are going to be having increasing problems.
Are we seeing any real interest from the energy companies in actually helping people do reductions here? I mean, it seems like for the domestic user, there's like rebates for doing this, that, and the other. I don't hear much about in that area for data centers, but I assume it must exist.
PG&E, which is the utility provider in Northern California, will actually offer you rebates to kill comatose stuff and to do virtualization, because they figured out that's one of the best ways they can reduce their demand on their data center.
So it's actually worth finding out who your utility company is and see what's there.
If you're in an area where the utility is capacity constrained and they want to cut their peak demand, that's the place to look. And there are now, PG&E is talking with 12 other utilities, where the other 11 want to copy what PG&E has done. So I think this is an interesting idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Something came to mind as I was coming up to the microphone that I'll mention as an aside. There's a website where the guy who runs the website talks about creating silent PCs. I forgot exactly what the name of the site is, but silence is what causes noise is fans. What causes fans is heat. So the same thing that makes your PC quiet. I have a PC in my office that I cannot hear. My laptop is like four times louder because it has really low rate fans and so on. But that wasn't really what I came to the microphone for.
Could I just stop you there?
Sure, please.
Because you're on a great point. Silent fans are going to, what creates noise is turbulence.
Exactly.
Turbulence requires energy. Quiet fans, oops, shoot, what did I do?
Good job.
I don't know what I did. Okay. Quiet fans are going to reduce the energy consumption. The thing is, on a manufacturing basis, we're talking pennies, if not dollars.
In fact, some of the quietest fans are the cheapest. I forgot. It's really strange. But this guy actually does real measurements of sound and real measurements of power efficiency. And he has another one called a related site called about green PCs. But and all of this is all very related to that, but it's sort of at the consumer level. It's interesting to he has tracked. No one pays attention to his site. No one pays attention to his site. All of a sudden, things start showing up about this. I mean, honestly, having a PC that makes no noise is wonderful. I mean, I can't hear it if I'm a meter away, and it's not. I mean, it's a little more expensive because I had to do it all myself and with parts. But I like that stuff anyway. You know, like a lot of people here probably do. No, there are no geeks here, are there? But what I was going to say is what's really going to drive this, my experience of a long time in this industry, is that particularly American publicly traded companies, what their real motivation is to be lemmings. That is to say, you need to get someone else to jump off the cliff, write a big story in CIO magazine about it, and then have somebody else do the same thing. And no one will ever follow up to see if it actually helped, because they're going to, say it's all wonderful, and it becomes the latest fad. That's what's going to change this. This other stuff about incentives and everything else, it's lemmings that's going to really change this. I mean, not that I'm cynical. I think that you're exactly right.
Do you know who writes those articles? Have anybody had ever been involved in how articles and publications get written? They're written by 24-year-old kids out of college that did English literature, and when they graduated, they didn't have anything else to do. And they get $20,000 a year jobs, and they string together a series of things into some plausible thing.
Well,
you're exactly right. It's 24-year-old. It's 24-year-old kids who have there's no validity checking.
How many people here have read an article about outsourcing with a company after 5 years of being the outsourcing? Anybody seen a single article about what it was like after 5 years? They all talk about how wonderful it's going to be after when the outsourcing gets completed. I mean, this is all about buzz. It's about creating buzz. What really goes on here that's going to make this happen is creating buzz. And you can call it whatever you want to call it. There are lots of different names for it, some more pejorative, some not repeatable in polite company. But they're all the same thing, really. They're just different ways of describing the same thing. But that's what's going to do this. I appreciate your studies, and they're valuable. But what you need to do is get some case studies and get them written up in CIO Magazine or wherever the two or three best places are, InfoWorld or wherever.
Let me apologize to the 24-year-olds here in the room.
Well, the good thing is there aren't many English majors here, so.
We all have to start somewhere. And we're all the cumulative results of what has come before us. But the problem is, I don't think we as Americans, or perhaps as the world, we're not willing to pay for information. We're not willing to pay for knowledge. And it costs us really a lot. In answer to your question, my program for the next 5 months is to come up with an awards program that people can apply for an award. But to get the award, you have to do what will be the right thing. And hopefully out of that process and the publicity that will come with it will come case studies. I know case studies, but they're not in the public domain. And there's great work being done. But it's not out where people can be motivated by it. So for Symposium 08, hopefully we're going to have a half a dozen different case studies on different things that people are doing.
Not a question, but I had a comment. I'm not sure how many people know, but this week on Monday, Intel released their new generation of Harpertown processors. And the Harpertowns, for those of you who don't know, use a new technology. It's a 45-nanometer fabrication technology that lowers the cost of the chip to you, lowers the power consumption of the chip, and increases the computation power at the same clock rate. So we decided to delay the purchase of our machines for our data center for this chip because we could save money both in capital costs by a significant amount, up to $300 per machine, and also in terms of energy costs at a rate of about 50% per CPU. So these are not insignificant savings. So if you're looking for machines, the major vendors aren't going to have these probably until January, but if you're planning on making any purchase decisions in December, you might want to hold off. The other thing that's coming is Intel's coming out with a new motherboard that will have things, like PCI Express and other advanced power reducing technologies on it. But it will also, for the first time, not require you to have fully buffered DIMMs. And fully buffered DIMMs are a huge user of power as well. So both of these things are good. And then there's also the Barcelona, if AMD can get their yield up, hint, hint. All of these things are good, and then one other thing you can look at is instead of going for the very fastest chip, the 3.0 gigahertz, drop down to the next fastest. Right. You can save 50% in power, and you'll only lose like 5 to 10% in performance. These are both good things that you can do.
Yeah, the clock rate I mean, that's why they had to go to the multi-core, because as the clock rate goes up, the losses, the energy losses just in the chip were to the point where they couldn't deal with the heat loss. I mean, we've been incredibly, half of the energy in a chip is just lost. It's not doing any work. So by slowing down the clock rate, you get incredibly efficient increases in chips in energy efficiency per watt. But the problem is there's no linkage, and people want to get the latest and the fastest. Please.
The one thing that's interesting, this site I talked about before, it talks about underclocking your machines. Mm-hmm. And in fact, most of these machines have ways to underclock them in software now. A lot of the machines you already own, if you're not running 100%, you can underclock them and cut their power consumption by 30 to 50%.
Absolutely. Just like on your laptop.
I mean, exactly like on your laptop.
And why aren't we doing that? I'm just a dumb facility guy.
Clue shortage?
Yeah. But what, are there technical problems? This is a question from me to you, and I'd like to know the answer. Are there technical problems?
No.
If you allow this feature, it's in the chip itself, there are settings. But you have to enable them.
Yeah,
where if it's not being used, it slows down.
There's also the speed step technology. The speed step technology that's built into the new chips as well. And in fact, if you even install something as old as CentOS 4.5, it'll automatically detect if your CPU has speed step, and then run these CPU speed programs for each core and automatically lower the clock rate on the CPU and then raise it again when it needs to. I'm not sure how well this works. In practice, it seems to be sort of iffy. But, okay, he says it works pretty well.
Please go up to the microphone.
And one,
I mean, I'd like to hear this response.
One program note, for people who are really interested in this topic, there's going to be another follow-on speaker, Lou Merchant from Sun, who will be talking about green technologies in a sort of practical sense, and she'll be talking about the T2000 and other things related to green data centers, not just Sun-specific stuff, but green data centers in general.
Just to mention that the CPU speed works, and it's a standard feature of Red Hat Enterprise Linux since version 4.
Not on multi-cores.
It works on my multi-cores perfectly.
Not on my multi-cores.
Well,
that's because you've got that Red Hat.
The only problem I had with the automatic switching of CPU clock was when you render sound and it switches, you can actually get the blip in the sound stream. So you have to disable that. But for normal data processing, it works very well.
The thing I have gotten back is that the application, it depends on how you implement this. Do you implement it at the BIOS level, or where is it implemented? But that some applications, once they see that the processor isn't right, they shut down, and the only way to get them back is to reboot them. So, but again, in a high availability type of environment where you might have two servers that are actually doing work, one of which is a failover, well, maybe you don't allow the power saving feature on those two servers, but certainly you could on the test machines, and you could on the QA machines, and you could on the DR machines. So, maybe you don't do it on your primary, but there's a bunch of other stuff you could do it on. And why aren't we doing that? And what are the limitations? And if it doesn't work, I mean, this is where there's got to be community dialogue. If this stuff doesn't work, we need to elevate it so that it can work. Otherwise, 5 years from now, we'll be having the same, it doesn't work, or I don't care, or I don't know. Thank you.
My name is Mike Lucas, and I'm an English major. I'll see you out front with pistols at dawn. But seriously, for the discussion on the press, most of those $24,000 a year college kids will be perfectly happy to talk with you about how you cut your cooling costs by 50%. Drop them an email. A lot, even folks from Network World will happily talk with you about that, and the people in this room can get it in the press, but you need to to take that step and let them know that you have done it. You also need to clear with your own PR department that you're allowed to do that.
Which is a problem.
And for some of you, that's a problem. But the people here in this room can create that buzz.
The problem that I sometimes see is that some of the stuff I see in the press that people are making claims for, basically they're making the argument for the perpetual motion machine, and there is no free. The things that I'm saying here are, if you hear people saying things that are radically different than what I'm saying, you got a perpetual motion machine going. There is no free lunch. This is physics. This is basic science. And we have lost our in our public discourse, we've lost that kind of capability. And we have a lot of wishful thinking being talked about.
By the way, Intel has put out an application. They designed it primarily for laptops. It will tell you how much power an application consumes.
Mm-hmm.
And they've a bunch of Linux applications have been attacked, and their power consumption has been cut down dramatically. And that application, although it was designed for laptops, works for anything. And, for example, they discovered that there was a video driver that was doing 800 interrupts per second when the screen was just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was deemed to be a bit excessive.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take the applications you run on machines you care about and help the community by at least saying, I measured it, and, hey, why don't you fix this? Right, and you may have to do a little work and work with the developer to do that, but particularly in the Linux community, these things can get fixed. And most people are willing to fix them if they just knew they had a problem. Most of the time it's like, oh, that looks like a bug, you know, and they fix it. But I think the coolest idea is this, in many different senses, is this program that will measure how much power an application takes, which applications on your machine are consuming power unnecessarily.
Point.
PowerTop, yeah.
Yeah, the name of that application was PowerTop.
I have terrible time with names.
For people who want to look into it later.
Say it again, because I didn't hear.
Was PowerTop?
PowerTop.
And it requires some extensions compiled to the Linux kernel, and you can just run it, and it'll give usage on power. A comment on the underclocking, and you're asking, like, what are some of the challenges? Some challenges that people in this community will run into when you start looking at that are really around capacity management. One of the things you run into is now when you underclock your machines, your CPU utilizations actually start looking higher than they might otherwise be. So some of the tools and measurements you used for, is this server busy, start becoming fuzzier.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's certainly a surmountable problem, but it's an area interesting, it may be an interesting area of research for some people here to start looking at how might we evolve some of these tools and how might we evolve how we're monitoring machines so we can tell how we are using
mm-hmm.
power while at the same time being able to underclock machines. And the other thing that comes into play is how do you make sure when you're doing your configuration management that you don't overbuild racks? Because if you have a lot of your machines running underclocked most of the time, and then some usage starts going up over time, and you have some big event spike comes on, you have to make sure that you haven't over-provisioned that rack from a hardware perspective and suddenly blow some breakers and go down, which is another reason why having configuration management start tying into what which hardware you have, how much power could it use, becomes more important when you actually start underclocking things.
I would be more concerned about the change in cooling requirements than I would about the change in power requirements. And this is another wrinkle that we will be dealing if we are successful in getting you guys to use this power save or underclocking or whatever we end up calling it. Data center power consumption today is relatively flat across days, across the weekends, across time of year. It's relatively flat. If you start beginning to vary the load in any significant amount, some people are going to have their cooling systems go unstable because cooling needs the assumption of data center cooling is that you have a relatively constant load. And if it starts varying, you're going to have more cooling problems than you have now. Just this is endlessly complex, and for some of us, it's endlessly exciting. But all of it gets back to we have to get smarter. There's efficiency available, but we have to be smarter about how we achieve it. Last question. Thank you.
So just a kind of a comment and maybe a tool to add to some people's belts. A lot of us, as has been mentioned, are just deeply in systems administration and have requirements thrust upon us by business units who don't understand the economic realities of what it means to operate a data center. And it's really difficult to bring these points across, right?
No.
So metaphors help. Metaphors help a lot when you're not getting the point across with engineering data and you're not getting the point across with predictive economics. Metaphors help a lot. And the one that I've been using for the last year or so that really has opened people's eyes is that thermodynamically, a computer looks like one other thing in the world, and that is a space heater, right? So from the perspective of thermodynamics, what you're doing in a data center is piling a whole bunch of space heaters into a room and then air conditioning it.
Exactly right.
And this metaphor, when you bring that out in front of facilities people and finance people and business people and start talking about the insanity of piling a room full of space heaters and then turning on an air conditioner to make sure it's under 70 degrees, that starts to open eyes, at least in my experience.
I'm totally with you. We have to come up with analogies that help people to understand. One of the analogies I know is, what's a Cadillac weigh? Or what's an SUV weigh? Well, if you fill a rack of hardware today with the latest and greatest stuff, it's going to weigh more than an SUV. And now you want to fill the computer room with 100 racks like that? So that means you're going to put 100 SUVs in the space of 100 racks? And how are we going to do this? It's insane.
You had mentioned earlier the financial incentives have to roll back. Oh, sorry, this was supposed to be the last question. Never mind.
I guess that's it. Thank you. I'd be glad to talk with you afterwards.